SFU Burnaby.
Welcome to Cangri, home of Canada's queer medium. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Allergies.
Oh, you are full on with the allergies today.
Oh, yeah, no, I am goobers. I took the pill about a half an hour ago. You caught me in the nice moment when it's kicked in enough for my allergies to be dying down, but it's not kicked enough for me to pass out. So
okay, we've got to be quick.
Yeah, you got 10 minutes. Let's go.
All right. Actually, that is about as much time as we have for our first segment. Later in the show, we'll be interviewing the two directors behind a new documentary into the incredible trans icon that performed at the Sapphire Tavern, Jackie Shane. There's a Canadian Heritage Minute about Jackie Shane's incredible work. She is truly incredible. We'll be talking about the documentary that they put together, Any Other Way, a little later in the show. Including, very exciting, we have been given permission to play a clip of a unearthed recording called Hey Mr. Cool Guy by Jackie Shane, not available anywhere online. Ooh. And we're not allowed to play the whole song, but we will be playing out with a short clip of Hey Mr. Cool Guy, a brand new unearthed track, posthumously by the incredible Jackie Shane. Following that, later in the show, we'll be interviewing the collections curator for the National Film Board, talking about the films that they're rolling out as part of the Public Service Pride Week. And we'll be going into that. But first, Ottawa has been at the center of a stirring controversy. Yeah, exactly. If you recall correctly, just to bring our audience up to speed, we're going to be a bit of a quick whiz through this. This summer has seen multiple Pride organizations being protested during the Pride parades by advocates looking to primarily end the war in Gaza. There has been varying approaches to this. As you may recall, Toronto Pride ended up getting cancelled with about 20 minutes left of the parade. I believe in Montreal, they just went around the protesters like a physical object. And in Victoria, BC, they tried to get out ahead of it, consulting people. But unfortunately, the ones that protested were not personally consulted. Mm-hmm. So we have now seen in late August, Ottawa Pride in the capital is one of the last major Pride festivals in Canada. Mm-hmm. And they've been watching how every one of these Pride organizations has been responding to this pressure to do something. And they came out with a very strong statement. It mm-hmm. had a number of things, such as verifying that their sponsors and supporters were not on the divestment list. To give mm-hmm. you an example of that, TD Bank, major Pride sponsor, has investments in an arms manufacturer that's connected to this conflict. But they issued a statement. It is the firmest, most pro-Palestinian statement that any Pride organization so far has mm-hmm. given. But I wonder, Sebastian,
and
they swing too far the other way?
You said just a minute ago that they've been paying attention to what other prides have been doing, but the degree to which this statement is strongly worded makes me question how much they have been paying attention, because there has been backlash. Various organizations in Ottawa are pushing back strongly against Pride, and some of these are organizations that people actually care about. Like, various organizations are saying, the Jewish Federation of Ottawa has said that they're not going to go.
They are very pro the State of Israel.
Yes.
So unsurprising that the Jewish Federation is not going. The Independent Jewish Voices group are going.
But there's various groups that a lot of people are either unsurprised. There's also various smaller community groups that are saying they're questioning ongoing, and kind of nobody cares because they're smaller groups, or they may not have a longstanding history. with the community, or they may not be inside the community they're supporting. But there are some major ones that are actually questioning their attendance. And two of them really jumped out at me as a surprise. The first one being the Ottawa Senior Pride Network. Now, they're not saying they're not going to go. They are going to go. They are going to attend Pride. Historically, the marshals for the parade, about half to three quarters of the time, are members of the Ottawa Senior Pride Network. A lot of the times, it's they're choosing marshals who represent the history of activism in Ottawa. So they're still going, but they have released a very strongly worded letter saying that they disapprove of Ottawa Pride selecting any side in a major, complicated, decades-long conflict on the other side of the ocean. Because there are people who are saying, we're not going because you chose the wrong side. And OSPN's is basically, how is it your job to pick either side? And you're just a pride festival. What does it matter anyway? Like they're taking the kind of cynical, boots on the ground, very based kind of answer. The other one is the CHEO, the
Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, there and the Ottawa General.
Yes, they have said that they're not going to attend, which at first I was like, oh, that's kind of a bummer. And then I remembered that the Gender Diversity Clinic, the sole purveyor of
gender-affirming care in Eastern Ontario.
Especially the Ottawa region, is within CHEO. So if CHEO is not going, then the Gender Diversity Clinic is not attending either. So there's a sort of a knockdown effect on this that is very, very interesting that they've painted themselves into this corner by having this strongly worded language. I don't know if you would say overly strongly. I guess opinions may differ on if it's too strong or not, but it's definitely strong. I don't think anyone could deny that.
Well, we sort of started to see this happening in, I think it was Nova Scotia or New Brunswick. I want to say Nova Scotia. The summer's been a bit of a much. And yeah, it was the premier of one of them didn't attend.
I think it was Halifax.
Yeah. And then I think in New Brunswick, the lieutenant governor also didn't attend. Now, why are these politicians not attending the Pride parades? It's politics. That's what it is. You know, you don't want to be you don't want to be on the wrong side of any debate. So effectively, these politicians are simply just opting out. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that happening with these hospitals. These hospitals provide care regardless of your religion.
Yeah.
And therefore, where the biggest complaint being levied against Capital Pride now, I'm just quoting an Ottawa Carlton District School Board trustee here who said, quote, for the whole Jewish community, it's made it unsafe. And that is very sad. Mm-hmm. So there really is a bit of a pitting of the Jewish community against the queer community. And the hospitals, the politicians, the mayor of Ottawa has simply said, perhaps it's better if we're just not in the conversation so that nobody yells at us.
You know, they're kind of taking the Norway approach during the Cold War when everything was a proxy war. It was, you know, Korea was a proxy war. Vietnam was a proxy war. There's dozens of proxy wars all over Africa. I know you say the Swiss, but I come back to Norway because one of my favorite things about Norway is according to the language of the Cold War, they were technically a third world country because they didn't choose a side. Mm-hmm. And they would regularly just leak information between Russia and America. And every time Russia would say, stop reporting the location of our subs, they would say, stay out of our water. So, I mean, I think a lot of people are kind of taking that approach of like, we are not going to be your proxy battlefield. You know, we can have opinions and we're going to keep them to ourselves. But, you know, sometimes you got to keep your indoor thoughts indoors. You know, not every thought needs to be shared.
You know, I see the challenge that Pride has found itself in. Yeah. As I mentioned at the top of the show, every pride has been protested. There's been serious repercussions. Mm-hmm. And they've essentially come out and said, look, we're not supporting the massive genocide that's happening in Gaza, you know, which is not it's not an outrageous statement to make.
Yeah.
But it seems like they've put on their big Wellingtons and they have waded full force into the pool of the Middle East conflict. And if anyone knows anything about history, the Middle East conflict is certainly high up there.
It's but not new.
It's a quagmire. It really is. It's a political quagmire. I just want to mention briefly this Ottawa Carlton District School Board trustee.
Yes.
Who has really been kind of rallying for the school board to also not attend the Pride Parade. That's an operational decision. It looks like the folks who run the school will probably go anyway, truth be told.
Yeah.
But some of the backlash to this school board trustee is saying that Pride should be welcoming to everyone. Telling the queer community what Pride is and isn't supposed to do, it gets the hair on the back of my neck goes up. I bristle at being told by a straight person what Pride should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I pause and I think, well, look, we're having, as a queer community, a very similar conversation about how this conflict should be handled.
Yep.
You know, maybe we are also wading into waters that we should perhaps stay out of. Same way that this lady has decided to tell us what Pride shouldn't be.
I mean, I think everyone has the right to an opinion. And I think if someone who is not in the community says, you are doing something that doesn't make sense to me, like I'm like, okay, I'll take that under advisement. You know, whether I agree with it or not, I think anyone has the right to any opinion. It's just, do they have the right to sit at the table and make declarations? It's a very different business. So, you know, the fact that there are people who are concerned about what's happening within the community, and I've seen a lot of people from who are not LGBTQ saying that they're worried that this will cause, you know, issues with cash flow for not-for-profits. It could cause people to reject the community. It could cause the community to reject its own institutions. A whole bunch of things could possibly come out of it. And then some people say, you know, here's something similar that happened to something else in the history of civil rights. Fair enough. But you're right. It's a difference between saying, look, this is what our community learned from similar events in our own history versus don't do that. Like, it's demands versus suggestions based on experience. I think one is fair and the other's a bit pushy.
Well, you know, the one thing that I come back to is when we look at the most recent hate crime statistics, the queer community has gone up by about 60-70% year on year in terms of crimes against our community.
Mm-hmm.
But that pales in comparison to the amount of anti-Semitic attacks that have happened against folks in the Jewish community.
Yeah.
And I think that we owe a degree of compassion and a degree of engagement with other folks who are also the victims of hate and disparagement. I don't know what the way out of this is. We know that a lot of folks are enthusiastically attending the Ottawa, the Rainbow Refugee Organization in Ottawa is definitely going, and they're thrilled. A lot of people are very happy with this statement. We will be at Capital Pride. I think it's next Sunday, and we'll see what we can get from folks attending and get a sense of what happens. It'll be interesting to see if it is protested, and who those protesters are. But we'll keep an eye out on that moving forward. However, to raise the mood a little bit, let's do some Tutti Frutti by Little Richard, and we'll be back just after.
Ah!
bum, bum, bum. Got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. Got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. She knows how to love me, yes, indeed. Boy, you don't know what she do to me, to the booty.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. Sebastian has stepped out for a moment, and we just heard the wonderful track Tutti Frutti by Little Richard. As we mentioned at the top of the hour, there is a very good reason for that particular reference, but I am very excited to be joined by two directors of, I want to make sure I get the name of the Any Other Way, Jackie Shane Story, incredible documentary. I've seen lots of clips and I'm excited to see it in the screening. I believe the screening will be coming to Ottawa, and I will certainly be lining up to go and watch it as well. We'll get all the details of the screenings a little later in the show, so have a pen ready so folks don't miss the screenings. But first, welcome, Luca and Michael. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you.
So for our layperson, the random person listening as we're driving along here, briefly, who is, for people who haven't seen the Heritage Minute, who is Jackie Shane and what inspired you to put this documentary together?
Well, hearing some Little Richard actually is a great context and jumping off point for who Jackie Shane is, because Jackie was coming up in the 40s and 50s with alongside Little Richard, alongside Jimi Hendrix, alongside a lot of other, Ed James, really at the birth of rock and roll. And she was born in the South and escaped the South and came up to Canada, where she found a great deal of success throughout the 60s in Montreal and Toronto and the East. And then in 1971, she disappeared and she was missing for 45 years and nobody knew if she was alive or dead. And really what this... this film is about in some ways is making sure that Jackie returns to the sort of pantheon of R&B soul greats like Little Richard, because she was that good. She was, she was that good. This is the kind of the story of rediscovering Jackie. And in 2016, after being missing for 45 years, it was announced that there was a reissue of all her music with her consent. And so for people like me that have been searching for Jackie for quite some time, this finally gave us the answer that we really wanted to hear, which is that she was in fact alive. She was living as a recluse. I tracked her down, took about a year, and then spent a year speaking with Jackie, during which she kind of told me her story and told me what a film about her life would look like and feel like. And then right after she agreed to make this film, she passed away. It was incredibly tragic. I cried buckets of tears, but that also changed the film into something that allowed for Luca and I to connect and for the family to discover that Jackie, that they had an aunt that they didn't know. And for us to kind of go together with them on a pretty incredible journey of finding out who this woman was.
It's interesting you mentioned, finding an aunt that you didn't know. I think it's Androni and the other niece, Vonnie, there's incredible footage of discovering almost a foil for the audience, also discovering who Jackie Shane is at an incredibly deeper level. Your lineup of folks who contribute their experience to the conversation in the documentary is really incredible. How did you go about, I mean, there's the obvious ones, the two nieces that inherit, you know, a house full of stuff, that's a no-brainer. But for the others, how did you go about creating the montage of voices that helped to lift Jackie Shane in this documentary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we did quite a bit of thinking on that, just because there wasn't that many people who have seen her live. So first, it's like, can we get some real firsthand accounts? And Michael did some great work in terms of digging through, which I guess you could talk about how you found people like Elaine, which is super impressive. And then we wanted a mix of, one, like queer people, LGBT people, people of color who could speak to their own experience, who, what does Jackie mean to you now? And, you know, how do you see the legacy of Black transness creatively, as well as people who were like musicians that played alongside Jackie or saw Jackie live. And then we definitely had Rob Bowman was a big part of this as well. You know, he was the one who connected Michael with Jackie and also had wrote the liner notes for the reissue. So having him in there as sort of as the biographer and as someone who, you know, knows a lot about their life became very clear. And then we got some surprises too, you know, in terms of the family and people that we didn't know existed. But then when we went down and met them in Nashville, we were like, oh, we should definitely interview some of these people about, like, what was it like back in the, you know, what was the family thinking about Jackie at the time? Like, what was Nashville like at this time? And then I guess there's Lorenzo, the Jefferson Sound Museum, who has spent basically his whole career trying to keep alive the legacy of Jefferson Street, which was a big part of Nashville with Little Richard and Jimi Hendrix was around at that time as well. So, and what, how else, Michael?
The whole thing about most of these people that Luca just mentioned is they're at once the experts in the field to talk about this, the family to talk about the family, Lorenzo Washington to talk about Nashville, Rob Bowman to talk about anything music, certainly R&B and soul. All of these people had a very personal connection to Jackie and yet happened to be the experts in the field to talk to this, which brought something to this film that I think most music docs, you know, don't have the opportunity to have. And then the other wonderful component of the people that we spoke with was Michaela and Sandra, who, you know, to talk to a young trans performer would be wonderful in terms of how this story relates to them. And to talk to a trans elder would be an extraordinary thing and something we'd want to have. Both these women were also playing in our rotoscope animation. They were performing as Jackie. And so they were inhabiting Jackie. They were deeply into Jackie. Sandra had been aware of her a bit at the time, but because these two women were, you know, doing that in our film, performing as Jackie, for which we then painted over in rotoscope and made this beautiful animation, but to then talk to them about their experience, their experience, was kind of incredible and kind of emotional. And both these women reading Jackie's autobiography. So the lineup of people, you know, the lineup of people that came out to talk about Jackie was extraordinary. And also, I have to point out the people that came out to make this film, like, you know, starting with Luca, but our crew and the people we worked with, Trans Film Mentorship, and the people that came out to the shoots and to work on this film, like the connection to Jackie from on screen people to behind the scenes was intense and emotional, and there was an urgency to tell the story, which I think, I hope, is infused into the film in a way.
One thing that does make me wonder, wading into this story and sort of seeing, you know, how Jackie's really getting the flowers at this point in time, and that's, I do wonder, you know, Jackie left Nashville, came up to, I think it was Cornwall, then Montreal, then to Toronto, and had a lot of success in Canada compared to the South. I wonder as well if even now, I know that there is a plaque being put together, hopefully in Nashville, but do you feel that the recognition today is still predominantly coming out of Canada and maybe not so much in the States. You know, I'm curious as to what your take on that is.
Oh, that's interesting. In Canada, to a larger degree, people have been aware of her. And I think the reissue of all her music brought a bit of an awareness throughout the world, in fact, like through South America, through Australia. But because of her relationship with Canada, I mean, we've experienced more of an understanding of that. But we just were in England with this film, and there was a certain demographic there that were coming out and saying, oh, we had heard of Jackie. And it was the people that were there for the birth of Northern Soul, you know, back in the day. And so she was known there. It does feel, I don't know if you agree with this, Luca, that the desire to give her her flowers in cities like Nashville is really, really, really palpable.
Especially in like younger Black queer community, for sure, and generally LGBT community, and then also the music community. I mean, sitting down with Michael Gray, for instance, you know, works at the Country Music Hall of Fame, and his passion for Jackie Shane and wanting to find the records and finding out that she lived in Nashville and that he lived in Nashville, and like, you know, so I think there's recognition going on.
Yeah. And I wonder, I mean, Canada, it feels like a celebration of Jackie. And at least our experience of shooting this film in Nashville, I think there's, I'm not quite sure what the words are, Luca, but like a sense of being able to right a wrong that maybe was done in Nashville, you know. And that's not to say that Canada, you know, was void of racism and transphobia and homophobia by any means, but the fact that she left Nashville, a lot of the people came out and frankly came out, I think, with some courage to say, this is what we did. This is why we didn't talk about her. And so I think there's a sense of not just celebrating, but also being able to maybe change.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
When I consider the politics today, you know, 2024, you know, the trans folks are a punching bag in politics even right now. You know, we discussed a couple of weeks ago and last week about the Algerian Olympic boxer, for example, and how the debate flared up around there. You know, when we're thinking about how Jackie Shane was unapologetically and unashamed in her identity, although I do recall having, you know, read into this that wasn't publicly identified as trans until much later. But what kind of role model does Jackie Shane continue to portray, even today, you know, not just in Nashville, but across everywhere where Jackie's had an impact? Because, I mean, it seems like she's a perfect beacon for authenticity and being yourself for even today.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say as well. I think, you know, it's at least when I transitioned 15 years ago, it was really hard to find somebody who was trans, who also, you know, believed in themselves and who was, you know, very involved in their career and who invested a lot in their talent. I mean, we had a few people, you know, I guess Chaz Bono was one of really the only public trans figures. And I think that to have Jackie Shane, I think a lot of people don't realize how incredible it is. And so for people to learn about her story now, I think for a lot of people, trans people and non-trans people, it's inspiring to say, hey, like, you know, one, trans people are way more than just their transition. And we mm-hmm. really hope to show that with this film. And that also, just because you're trans doesn't mean your life needs to be, that your life can still be, you know, empowering, and your life can still be full of adventure and joy and fun and talent.
There's one, I think it's the opening line of Jackie Shane's autobiography about, and you may, I don't know if either of you have the quote on the top of your head, about having not having lived.
I was born, but I never.